Hello and welcome back to the podcast.
Your
where
voice got all sultry there for a second.
Welcome. Oh yeah.
Hey.
This is the podcast where Bill and I look into the future.
Yeah.
Only to find out that none of you have ever seen this movie.
Huh.
And are wondering why we covered it.
Wow.
That introduction can mean only one thing.
That God, it's been a real sport to me. I was going to try to put off my walking impressions until well into this. What is in the box?
That introduction
can mean only one thing.
We are. We are. It's so hard not to.
Are you into like 2 hours of bad Christopher Walken impressions? Because listeners, that's what you're looking forward
Buckle
to.
Buckle up.
Buckle up.
Because today,
that there you
we
go. That was good.
Are watching The Dead Zone.
Yeah. Yeah.
1983.
That's right. Who directed this one? Give it to me. David Cronenberg. Okay, I'm going.
I like what Cronenberg's done to this point.
Hey, I'm a fan. Okay, I'm done. That's it.
We're not done. No, we're not done.
I'm done. That's it.
So, for those of you who didn't understand us, this is The Dead Zone. The Dead Zone, sorry, from 1983.
That's right.
A Cronenberg joint.
That's exactly right.
How do I know Cronenberg at this point?
Of the movies that we've covered, we took a look at Rabid. That was a David Cronenberg movie.
Hmm.
Okay. Remember that one? Ooh. Pit hole. Whole little thing coming out of a hole in yep. woman's armpit. And he did the remake of The Fly. That we watched.
Oh, right. Okay.
That's what we here, you and I, we know David Cronenberg. That's what we've covered thus far. So yeah, we're in the middle of a King run, so we're looking at a Cronenberg take on a Stephen King novel. I will go ahead and say right from the top, kind of an atypical David Cronenberg movie. Also kind of an atypical Stephen King story, I think.
Maybe an atypical horror movie.
Maybe not a horror
is
movie.
Sub question, is it a horror movie?
Great question. It's a fair question. Yeah.
I guess maybe it's a horror movie for people who don't like Christopher Walken.
Yeah. If you're not a fan of the Walken... then I said I was done. I'm done.
We are not done.
Quit pulling me back.
This is happening throughout the podcast.
Yeah, then this might be a horrible trip, but
this podcast might be a horror movie.
We'll find out. Yeah, it's a weird one. I'm not gonna lie. It's on all counts. It's an anomaly for Cronenberg. It's an anomaly for King. It's a bit of an anomaly as a horror movie. Mm. Is it a horror movie? I don't know.
But it is right on par for Martin Sheen. Just
that's
right. Just
this is
right
exactly where
wheelhouse.
He should be. Yeah.
He's like, I'm the president. I'm writing this thing.
Here we go. He's this like this set him up for the West Wing
this
in ways
his...
that you wouldn't believe.
This is part of his campaign for The West Wing. He showed this movie the audition. He's like, I don't even need to audition.
Look, I've already done
it. Look at this movie. I campaigned.
Have I done this? Twice.
Yeah.
Look. He also played JFK.
Oh, that's right.
The guy's all about it.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. It was like he had a premonition, which was I'm all about the politics.
How surprised were you to see Martin Sheen in this movie?
I mean,
I guess you probably saw his name
in the credits, so I wasn't super surprised.
Sure.
I was actually, I'll be honest, I was sort of expecting him after watching the credits.
Okay, fair enough. Like, When does Martin Sheen show up in this fucking thing?
But there was a point where I was like, where's Martin Sheen? Because yeah. you promised me Martin Sheen, and I haven't seen Martin Sheen
yet. Credits. Yeah. The fuck?
We had a deal. You told me an actor was in this movie that hasn't shown up
yet. Haven't seen him yet.
We've got less than half the movie left. Where is Martin Sheen?
Go. Jesus.
Let's go.
Oh, no. I almost, based on that, hate to ask this, but before we jump into history, do you want to hit us with a synopsis?
Oh, you should have. You should have.
Hey.
Because I have not brought this up. Dead Zone.
So, no.
No. A man awakens from a coma to discover he has a psychic ability.
Okay, short to the point. It's not wrong.
That is an efficient synopsis. It is not from wrong. IMDb.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, IMDb.
I mean, that's about as efficient as the movie could have been, too. I mean,
huh?
That's.
You feel like I went too long?
I mean, there's not much to the movie. There's not a lot going on. We'll get there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We will get there. Before we start diving in beat by beat, should we talk about history?
Yes.
Are you here for it? Are you wearing your history peacoat?
No, but I'm wearing my walk-in mask.
Yes, you are. And I wish you'd take it off because it's disturbing. All right, let's kick it. Hey, this one also 83. Do we talk about that? Because same year that Cujo came out. Cujo. Same year, 83. We talked about probably 83 last episode. Honestly, I don't remember. It was late. We drinking
did. We
heavily.
Had, we did like a best of music, I think.
We did talk a lot about music in 83 for Cujo. That's right, for the Cuge.
The Cuge.
So let's talk about Cronenberg at this point. I mean, we've already brought him up. His history in filmmaking at this point has been really kind of horror specific. He's done a couple things that weren't necessarily horror films, but what he's known for is a horror director, and specifically, as we've talked about Cronenberg before, kind of a body horror guy. Like, his thing is really about how the body will change, the body will mutate, that, you know, disease will break apart a body. Like, really kind of basing those fears, putting those onto the screen. Not the case here. This is not a body horror movie. Seems like maybe a paycheck movie. Don't know. But when I got done watching this, I was like, this is really more in line with like some of his later work. It's really very kind of character driven. It's not like trying to bring across like this a bigger point of, you know, our own decay will be our demise. It's just like a character driven story. Which I think, looking back on it with the benefit of hindsight, is interesting to see Cronenberg in this place in 1983. So by this point, he'd done things like Rabbit, which we took a look at. He'd done Scanners. He had done The Brood. He is going to, in a couple years, do The Fly. I think the same year, possibly, 83, he did Videodrome, which was one of my absolute favorite movies.
That was a movie that was recommended to me by a listener.
I've probably also recommended that to you a number of times.
We haven't watched it yet, though.
We haven't. I will save that one for a special one. It's, as I said, one of my favorites.
Okay.
So yeah, it's interesting. Again, we talked about 83 probably last time. This is really kind of an upswell of horror films, an upswell of King adaptations. We just saw another one this same year with Cujo that we just covered the last episode. So an interesting time in horror. I will say my own personal history with this, much like Cujo, had read the book before I saw the movie. Saw the movie probably as a teenager. I remember seeing it pretty young. And it's one that didn't necessarily stick with me as a horror movie necessarily, but one that stuck with me. It still got its hooks into me, even if it wasn't a kind of straight up horror story. And I'll say the same thing about the book. When I read the book, it wasn't one that I was like, oh, that was really scary, but I was really invested in it, really invested in the characters as it went through. So, yeah, it's one that I saw as a younger man. It's one that I have watched through the years. I've seen it a number of times at this point. And we'll kind of talk about what my feelings are now with it as an adult. But, Nikki, what's your history with this movie?
I have no history. I did not know this was even a movie or a book. I had no idea this existed.
The title meant nothing to you?
No, nothing.
Let me ask you this. Does the title mean anything to you now?
No.
Okay.
No, doesn't. Fair enough. No, we'll get there. But yeah, it doesn't. Title better than the movie, I'll say.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Okay.
We'll get there.
Should we start diving in?
I'm curious if, before we go
past
history, yeah. So, Walken.
Uh-huh.
Hey. No. What is he?
If we continue with this, it's just going to stretch on the podcast like 4 hours.
You can expect that.
No.
Walken is not Walken at this point, right?
No.
So he's not doing a character of himself yet.
That's just him.
But what is he? Is he a household name at this point?
I don't think so. I remember seeing Christopher Walken in a movie called, it's not Dreamscape, what am I thinking? Brainstorm, something. I remember seeing him in a science fiction movie about the scientists who invented this machine that could record your dreams. And then people would get kind of addicted to playing these tapes. It was Natalie Wood's last movie.
It was the same year as this.
Yeah.
Brainstorm.
I remember seeing him in that and going, "Wow, who's that guy? He's got a vibe that I'm not used to."
Hmm.
So I remember seeing the Dead Zone and going, "Oh yeah, it's that guy from Brainstorm. I remember that dude." Okay. And then as years passed, I was like, "Oh, Christopher Walken. Yeah."
So prior to this, he was in Annie Hall.
He sure was.
Deer Hunter.
Yep. Tragic character in Deer Hunter, yeah.
And then I don't know, but he's been in a bunch of TV shows, essentially. Yeah, TV series. A lot of TV. And then I think it looks like Deer Hunter may have been his first big, although I don't know what Roseland was or what he was in Annie Hall.
He was Annie Hall's brother.
Okay.
Who talks about sometimes when he's driving down the road and he sees the headlights come the other way, he just wants to veer into it.
So this is Dead Zone's 83, 85, the very next movie he does.
Yeah.
A View to a Kill.
We have another James Bond guy in this movie as well.
Who?
The rich dude, the father of the kid.
Who's that?
He's in License to Kill.
As what?
As the guy, if I'm remembering this correctly, he's the guy that gets put in like the pressure thing and his head explodes.
Boy, I don't remember that at all.
There's a lot going on in that movie.
Wow. Okay. I'm blown because Walken seems very naive and kind of amateur in this movie to me.
Do you think that's the character?
Maybe. It just blows my mind that he's
the next movie.
2 years later, the next movie he does, he's Max Zorin, the villain in a Bond movie.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. I did not know that. Wow. Okay.
What a view. To a kill. No, got that song stuck in my head, so thank you. Thank you for that.
It could be worse.
Yeah, it wiped out License to Kill, which I put in my own head, so there you go. Okay, are you ready now to jump in?
I am. I've never been more ready.
Okay. Here we go. We start with credits, like most movies do. I will call it here. We get a like white text on screen title card of The Dead Zone.
I'm glad you picked up on this, too.
And then we spend a couple minutes building a new title card for The Dead Zone.
Why? You already showed us the title.
Yes.
One or the other.
Yes. I agree. I think...
Also, the second one's way better.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if they'd stuck with that and just let us build to that as the title card, I think that would have been fantastic.
Yes.
Like, take out the white text, dead zone.
Just show actors.
Yep.
And build towards the title.
Yes. What they're doing while they're building that title, so I mean, to tell the story here a little bit, we're seeing like still shots of what appears to be kind of New England countryside. Fallish, winterish. It's set in a real vibe, and it's really kind of putting us as an audience in place of where this movie's taking place without having to do a lot of work. It's just giving us these images that we're sitting there taking in. Yeah. But as these images are showing, it's blacking out spots in the pictures, almost a dead zone, if you will.
A dead zone?
A dead zone. Until it all comes together and we've got like the font that was on the cover of the book for the Dead Zone. I'm exactly with you. Had they stuck with that as the title card, would have been perfect. We didn't need the text before that.
I'm glad that you have that note, because my very first note is like, you showed us the title straight away.
Right.
Why are you doing this?
Settle down. Movie. I don't mean you.
Also, the font of the second title is mm-hmm. fantastic.
Yep.
It's a great looking font.
Yes.
The white title card was just dumb.
Super plain. Yes. Boring. Yep.
Didn't need it.
Agreed.
These were non-artistic people who designed this title sequence.
I have to ask, as you're watching this, virgin viewer, know nothing about this movie, and you're seeing some of the names come up on the screen here. You've got a Christopher Walken. Mm. You've got a Martin Sheen. Like, what are you thinking as you're going into this?
I'm thinking this movie's going to be epic.
Okay.
This is an epic movie, and I don't know why I haven't heard of it by now.
Interesting. Okay. We're introduced to young Chris Walken, bad haircut, glasses.
I think continuing watching the movie, you realize, in most of the movie, he looks like Christopher Walken. I think they combed his hair forward and down intentionally here to make him look younger.
A little younger.
Appear, he's got glasses and this like weird comb job on his hair.
Yeah, that's like this almost like kind of Caesar hairdo. Yeah.
It looks like he's wearing a wig almost.
It's a weird look. To be fair, his hair through the rest of the movie also not much better.
It's very thick and just...
It's a little bushy.
It just... sticks out.
Yeah.
He's got it. I think it's a great head of hair. I mean, I'll take
listen, that I'm
hair.
Not I'm not knocking his hair. I'm just saying whoever styled his hair, maybe
sure,
maybe not their best work.
I get the sense though, because I mean the hair he has in the later part of the movie is kind of Walken's hair throughout his career.
Huh.
And I wonder if he just has crazy hair, like his hair just sticks straight
that's
out.
That's just how it is. Maybe
so he's doing the best he can.
Maybe. I'm gonna say this, like, I think this movie does this a lot. It will paint with a very wide brush to get us character information quickly, efficiently. And this is one of those situations. So we're introduced to him. We see he's a teacher. He's teaching about Edgar Allan Poe. And I will also say this, I could listen to him read The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe for 2 fucking hours.
Yeah.
Like, had that movie just kept going for whatever the running time of this movie, I would have been set and good. Christopher Walken reading Edgar Allan Poe, you don't fantastic. Get better than that. You don't sure. get better than that.
Don't. No.
We also learn quickly that he's got some sort of relationship with another fellow teacher. The actress playing Sarah in this case, we've seen her before. She was in the 70s remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers with Dee Suths.
Was she?
She was a female lead in that film. She was.
Huh. Okay. I don't remember that, but okay. I'll allow it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. They leave school. He's got a surprise, takes her to a fair.
Yeah.
That is populated by them.
Zero people?
Yeah.
No one's on the roller coaster?
Just those
when
two.
When does that ever happen?
And the guy running the roller coaster. There may be 3 people in this fair.
Now, I mentioned this before we started recording. This roller coaster is the almost, if not the exact same layout, track-wise, as the wooden coaster at the Washington State Fair.
I think if you go to any kind of fair that's got a roller coaster, it's essentially the same layout.
I mean, this is, I just rode this coaster, the Washington State Fair coaster last weekend. This is, I think, the same blueprint of that coaster, and it's wood. It's, was there just like one version of a wooden coaster that the fair, like different fairgrounds built?
I think so. Honestly, like, I think it's, I'm going to say this. I'm no roller coaster expert, but from what I understand with those old wooden roller coasters, like that climb up the hill, that chain climb up that initial hill, and then the drop, like you're essentially riding that energy from that drop through the rest of that roller coaster. There's nothing pulling you through the rest of it.
Yeah.
So that map, that outline for those old wooden roller coasters is probably essentially going to be the same thing. Because they know the amount of energy it takes to run through it once you drop that first hill. So they're probably not adjusting that until they start figuring out new technology with roller coasters.
Interesting. You've been listening to Coaster Curious.
Yeah, thank you for joining in with Coaster Curious. Next week, we'll be talking about Revolution. Mm-hmm. At Six Flags Magic Mountain, Valencia, California. Join us, please. The book, they go to a a fair like this, and they play like a kind of Wheel of Fortune game. And there's a whole thing with numbers and the dead zone that's in Johnny's brain. And that's kind of where it comes in. So I guess more filmic to have them ride a roller coaster, possibly. I don't know. I don't know why they made that change necessarily. It's weird, though. It's like having just those two people alone on a roller coaster felt isolating and weird.
Well, that's never happened, I think, in the history of roller coasters. And then they get off the coaster, and the coaster, like, attendant guy, like, no one else gets on in the car.
Yeah, there's nobody else in line.
And then he just goes, all right, take it away. Like, who's he talking to? And are they taking the car off the track?
That's right.
Or did he just send it out with no one on it? He's like, all right, go send it again.
My guess is because and Johnny has an episode while they're on that roller coaster, like some kind of head thing.
Oh, he does.
Yeah, he's like feeling like a headache.
This is before the accident.
Yeah, sure is.
So this was setting in pre-accident.
Yes.
They didn't really spell that out.
They didn't. And that's something that does get spelled out in the book. So in the book, as a child, he'd had a head injury, like in a skating accident.
Oh, why didn't we know any of this?
Well, because they're trying to cram a lot into this movie and keep it at like a reasonable length.
I thought that the accident is what caused it, but you're right. He does have an episode on the coaster. Yep.
Yeah. And I think they stop, the coaster stops, the guy operating it says, how's the ride, folks? And neither one of them ever respond. So then he's just like, all right, fuck it, take it off, we're done. They don't like this ride. I think that convinced him to just then demolish the roller coaster. And that was the end of it.
They blew it up.
Yeah, yeah.
That was it.
If Chris Walken isn't into this, then fuck it.
Huh.
Yeah, set it on fire.
I thought it was weird because he goes, all right, take it away. Like, who, take it where? Are you?
He's just talking to himself at that
point.
There's
no one else. There's nobody else here.
Yeah. Johnny, Sarah, they leave. They go back to Sarah's house. Johnny's dropping her off. She invites him in because, hey, it starts raining.
Sarah wants to get it on.
She says he can spend the night. She says you can get it on. You can really get it on.
You can bang. She goes, you can bang a gong.
Yeah. You are a Jeepster for my love, is what she says. She just starts going through the T-Rex catalog.
She says, I was dancing when I was 12.
That's right. She danced her way out of the womb, is what she says.
That's right.
That got creepy. That's why he left.
My problem with when he leaves is it's pouring rain.
It's pouring rain.
He has a hood on that jacket. Doesn't put it up.
Okay.
Who goes out into the rain with a jacket, with a hood?
Okay.
I'm not talking about like a light, like kind of mist.
Uh-huh.
Like it's pouring rain. It's a drizzling. No, it is pouring rain.
This is a Canadian rainstorm.
There's a hood on the jacket. Uh-huh. Doesn't put it up.
Okay. I will see your complaint. And I will go ahead and throw out who then runs as a lady runs out from that covered porch into the rain to kiss him again.
Who then leaves? Who doesn't run back into the house? All
right. That's right.
Your complaint's probably more appropriate than mine.
Why is he leaving? Well, because he says some things are worth waiting for, which turns out to be very ironic for him.
He goes, no.
No.
Some things are worth.
Some things are worth.
Waiting for.
Waiting for. You fucking pull me back into it. God damn it. Which now I'm like sitting here thinking about that. Like, we get, like, these clues throughout the movie that he's coming from a very highly religious background.
Is he?
Did you not pick that up
at all? I mean,
at all?
Once you see his parents.
Yes.
Later, yes.
Yes. But if you, like, take that knowledge and bring it back, maybe that's why he's leaving.
Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. Gets in his VW bug, drives away in a pouring rainstorm. Meanwhile, coming down the road in a different direction.
I love an old VW bug, by the way.
Sure, sure. I learned to drive a stick in a VW bug. Same color. Same exact color. May have been the same goddamn bug. I don't know.
Did you run into a milk truck?
Twice. The milk truck exploded, though. That's weird.
This didn't explode.
That was weird. Yeah, that one did. The one I ran into did.
Okay. Was this milk?
Milk is different.
What was this late truck? 80s.
It was a milk truck.
Also, why was it? Sorry, we were jumping ahead. Milk truck rolls up. The cab drives off.
Sure.
He
makes a sharp turn. The
trailer
tanker disconnects from the truck.
Disconnects, falls over, and then just slides. Really
roller discos its way down
really
the road.
Slowly uphill. Just slowly. Like with the weirdest inertia, it doesn't slow down. It just clearly on a track, just slowly rolling up the hill, sliding up the hill
towards him.
Doesn't stop.
I will also go ahead and call out when that tank is rolling down the road. No red.
That's right.
It's not red.
But and he's obsessively wiping the windshield. Was there no defrost in V-Bugs?
There's very little in a VW bug.
That's true.
You're lucky if that started and the windshield wipers went at the same time.
All right. So the fair that he's wiping condensation off the inside of the windshield.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes sense to me.
But he doesn't see this thing? His headlights aren't on, apparently?
Well, like, I mean, it's pouring down rain.
You're going to see this.
His window's fogged up. It's dark.
You're going to see this.
I don't think you're taking into account the lack of power in a VW bug's headlights.
All right.
He sees it the last minute, tries to swerve to avoid it, clips the end of it.
Milk everywhere.
Milk. Surprising lack of milk, actually.
That's true. It wasn't full.
I kind of expected this to like just gush milk.
It was an empty tank. Yeah, that's true. If it was full, think of all the volume of liquid that would have rushed.
Oh, I have been. For years. Johnny had a car accident. We find out he's been put in intensive care. Sarah, his lady friend, goes to the hospital, sees he's all bandaged up. He's in traction. He's got tubes in his nose. Things aren't looking good for Johnny. Fade to black. Come back. Johnny's in a institution. He's in a clinic, the Wezak Clinic, if I remember correctly, if that's how you pronounce his name. Comes to. Dr. Sam, who will continue to play throughout the rest of this movie, talks to him. He's like, you've been in a very serious car accident. You've been a guest of this clinic. Drink some water. But he's being really kind of fishy about things, kind of withholding some information.
Yeah, you don't know. At this point, I'm thinking, is he in some sort of weird insane asylum? Mm. Like Doc is saying he's worse than he is. He's like playing mind tricks. Like, what is happening here?
Uh-huh. Yeah, because you had no idea, right?
No idea.
Yeah. Invites his parents in, and the parents, his mom specifically, spills the information that he's been in a, as she calls it, a trance for 5 years. Now, Johnny's been in a coma for 5 years.
This point, they met, there was a golden opportunity in this scene.
For
his parents to come in. Doing Christopher Walken impersonations.
No, there was no such thing as a Christopher Walken impersonation in 1983.
Just go with me. Imagine
sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How magical this scene would have been if Christopher Walken wakes up from a coma and his parents come in and his dad's like, son,
you're gonna go for it, do it,
son.
Yeah,
we thought you were dead. You were in a coma for 5 years.
Trance for 5 years.
We thought you were dead.
That's pretty good. That's
in pretty fact, good. We got a new son.
You've been practicing this one,
haven't you? I've been practicing this all day. Just imagine how amazing the scene is. If his dad sounds like Christopher Walken.
Well, I think.
And then his mom starts talking and she sounds like him too.
Yeah, it'd be a different movie.
Son.
Yeah, did you get more?
No, that's it.
I feel like you do though. God put you in a trance. I think mom's giving us a bit of a Maine accent, which was a point of contention with the last episode of not being able to nail down what a Maine accent is. So, shit. Now we've got a walking accent mixed with a Maine accent.
Got a walking accent on the loose.
It's walking here. Okay, we find out he's been in a coma 5 years.
You don't agree? You didn't even respond to this. Do you agree with me? Wouldn't this scene have been so much better?
I feel like it would have been a touch distracting. A touch. It might have been a step too far.
Oh, I wish that had happened.
I think had this movie been made
his
now-ish,
dad's like, son,
now-ish.
And Walken's like, dad.
What happened?
What are you doing here?
What does he mean? No, I think it would have been too far.
All right. Yeah, you're probably right.
Okay. Coma 5 years. Sarah has moved on. She's gotten married.
Oh, Sarah.
Sarah
moved from the friend zone to maybe the dead zone.
Cool.
Is what I was thinking.
Oh.
After this. Because she goes, yeah, Sarah moved on. She's married.
Yeah.
And he's like, holy shit. And that's where I thought, okay, this is the dead zone, is he's turning into a serial killer. She moved from the friend zone to the dead zone.
Uh-huh.
If you know what I mean.
I do.
This doesn't come to fruition at all.
No, that's not where the story goes.
No.
Nope. He's lying in bed sweating like a monster.
Sure. As you do.
Nurse comes in to check on him. I mean, literally, I hadn't noticed this before, or at least it didn't jump out. I don't remember it from before, but nurse comes to check on him. I'm like, is he having a fever? That wasn't an opening for me to do. I got a fever. I'm like, literally, did he just
have a fever?
More cowbell. What? Like, he's sweaty like fuck. And doing some research after the fact, apparently they put like fire retardant stuff on him, which made him look super sweaty. So I don't know if they then brought that over to this scene, because I don't think they would have filmed him just in this scene with fire retardant all over him. I don't know. Whatever. Nurse essentially kind of accidentally wakes him up. He grabs her and has a flash, and like he jumps, like every time he's gonna start having visions. He does this like kind of jerking thing, wide-eyed Christopher Walken
dying
thing. Hey, and he sees a little girl in a house that's on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Nice effect with the fishbowl boiling and then bursting.
Right. Yeah.
I appreciate that. He's essentially telling this nurse, your daughter Amy, she's in a fire.
There's still time.
Save the girl. But I like the extra little bit there of showing him in the hospital bed. The hospital bed's on fire, of like putting him in that space.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's in the scene. Yeah.
I like that little bit. So it turns out, hey, he's come back from this coma. I'm not even trying, but it's coming out.
He's come back from this coma.
No. With some sort of ability.
But he already started, I think, to your earlier point on the roller coaster, he maybe started it before. It's not because of the coma.
Well,
coma exacerbates it?
I think so. So I think the point of the book like really kind of clarifies this a bit, is that yes, he had this prior head trauma, and then like that exacerbated by a coma, like the parts of his brain, this dead zone that's not working anymore, like the brain is then carving new paths around these dead zones in his head that are enabling this ability.
Mm, interesting. That's not at all what he tries to describe later.
No, it's not. So talking to Sam, the clinic, the guy who's leading the clinic, the older doctor character, he mentions something like this is happening, like touches Sam's hand and has another flash, this time of World War II.
Or one? I'm not sure.
There's so a lot many, of horses.
There's so many horses.
A lot of horses.
Which war was this?
I'm assuming it's based on
the Revolutionary War.
Where they're at in history now.
I think it's two.
It's got to be two.
I just didn't know there were that many horses in combat.
I didn't either. I'm two. Also not a World War II historian, so maybe they did utilize horses. There are a lot of horses.
I was thinking it was one or the Revolutionary War.
The horses were throwing me off. I'm not
the horses
lie.
Threw me off.
Too. Yeah. The Hitler talk later in the movie just reinforced, okay, this is likely World War II.
It's two.
But has a flash of Dr. Sam, his history as a child being escorted out of, or being kind of smuggled out of the country he's in. His mother puts him on a carriage to escape the ravages of war.
And she can't get on the carriage for some reason. We're not sure.
Not enough for
him. No, yeah, don't.
They barely let him on. And then Johnny tells Sam, she's still alive. Your mother's still alive.
Which to hit, he replies, that's impossible. That's him. That's not true. That's impossible.
That's impossible.
Which is probably actually true because he's an old man.
Okay.
She would have to be 130 for this to be true.
But so like I sat here and really spent some time with this.
Did you?
I really did.
Because what is he, 70 in this scene?
I don't think so. The thing. So like and that's how I pictured him. Like, is this like late 60s, 70s guy?
He looks like an old man.
And then I started like kind of putting the math together. I'm looking at him as a kid in this vision. I'm like, okay, if that's World War II in the 40s, this is 40 years later. He might be at tops 12 in that scene, which puts him in his 50s now, present day.
Oh, wow.
And then I was like looking at the guy as an actor. I'm like, yeah, he's probably in his 50s.
Oh, Jesus.
I probably look like that guy.
No, you don't have gray hair, though. This guy had gray hair.
Oh, look at my beard.
But your hair isn't gray.
If my hair were gray, would I look like... If my hair were gray...
Hair were gray.
Would I look like him?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I don't think he's that old.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So does that kind of rearrange your entire thought process?
Should we stop recording?
Maybe. Are we
kill
done?
Ourselves?
Wow. Yeah, no. That got way darker.
Did it?
Come on. Yeah. Not what I was thinking at all.
Yeah. No, that rearranges things.
Dr. Sam calls apparently information to find the number of this person.
So how old is Walken supposed to be in this movie?
Walken? I'm going to guess 30s. Yeah. He's 16.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. 16. Doctor calls, here's his mom, can't talk to her. Has a conversation with Johnny, says, yeah, he did call, he was right. She is still alive, but I couldn't say anything because it can't change anything. It can't change anything. Which is a theme that I think pulls through the movie. Mm,
there you go.
So, of his psychic flashes at this point, he's seen something present day. With the girl trapped in a house on fire. Who gets rescued, by the way. She turns out fine. He gets a flash in the past. With Sam's past in World War II.
Or one. Or the Revolutionary War.
Or possibly the War of 1812. I don't know.
Yeah, we're not sure.
I don't know. He goes on TV. Oh, because there's all this talk about how he had the second sight and rescued this girl from this fire. So all these reporters want to talk to him. So he has this interview on TV in the clinic. and he's kind of accosted by this like kind of rock and roll reporter. We know that because he's wearing a black
jacket. Well, there's this like kind of animosity with the reporter and yes. him where he's like, oh, you think you're cool? Like, shh, prove it.
Yeah, you're not wearing a leather jacket.
Right. But like they just wanted to talk to, he wasn't boasting anything.
Right.
It's not like he's advertising, like, I have this, I'm a superhero.
Yep, that's right.
He just did a thing and they're like, can we talk to you? Presumably. And then they're giving him shit about it.
Well, it's this one guy, and it's like he's after a story. It's like he's like the Geraldo Rivera. Like he's going to debunk
he's
this
gonna,
story.
Right. And he's like, all right, how about a demonstration?
That's right. Yep.
And then he chickens out of the demonstration. Once he holds his hand, and then Walken's he like...
slipped into his hand.
Hand. Once Walken grabs his hand, he's like, your sister.
Sister...
You want to know something about how his sister died?
Yeah.
And he's
Do
like,
you want to know why she killed herself?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
So he nails it.
Yep.
He calls his bluff. Yep. Is like, yep, got it. And the guy freaks out.
That's right. Takes off. And that causes an uproar. Actually, before that happens, I do want to call out that that reporter mentioned something about will Stilson win?
Oh, yeah. They've got the race for governor.
Yeah, so, like, we're already introduced, like, a premonition in this movie of this character of Stilson. Like, we get hints throughout. There's later scenes in the movie where, like, we see pictures of him and billboards being built before we're ever introduced to this guy. So, like, it's, like, kind of slowly bringing in this idea of who this character is before we ever meet him, like, more than halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
Johnny's mom is watching this, newscast and, has a stroke while it's going on.
Yeah. Unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. She gets really worked up at the fact that they're treating her son poorly. Apparently we also missed a scene. Sarah comes visiting at the hospital.
Yeah. They meet up. Yeah. Walken is, Walken.
He's a Walken.
He's on his crutches. Trying to do some
PT.
Just chop chop. What is the
chug chug
chug chug yeah. chug?
Spend a little more. That PT guy could not be more Canadian if he tried. That guy may as well have been holding maple syrup in both hands. And
well, the
hockey.
Thing that bugged me was Walken is clearly struggling. Like he's on crutches. The physical therapist has like your 80s sort of. Sweatpants,
yeah.
Like sweatshirt, like towel around his neck, and he's like jogging in place, like as if that's gonna make Christopher Walken like walk faster.
Yeah, well, it's gonna motivate him. Look at me, I can do it. Look at these sweatpants.
And he's like, I just want you to. What does he say? Does he? Is it chug chug?
What's expecting a little more? Yeah, something like
chop
that.
Chop.
Chop salad.
Something.
Yeah.
And then he's like, "You can you chug chug
chug chug chug chug chug chug."
You wanna? And then he
hush
he,
hush.
The PT takes off, and he's like, "Are you gonna? You should continue chug chugging, or yeah. whatever the term."
He was gonna do a beer bong litter, I think is what it was.
Chug chug
chug chug.
Yup yup chub.
Yup nup. Jib jab. Chip 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 chip
chip
chub. Sarah comes calling. Chip, Johnny finds out not only is she married, but she has a kid.
Mm. Yeah, that's unfortunate.
And he's
is this too quick? Is this too quick? 5 years
is what too quick that she's had a kid
to have? Not too quick to have another relationship.
Yeah,
maybe even not too quick to get married. I would say, but to already have a kid who's like 1 year old.
I don't think that kid was one.
You don't think so?
I think that kid was younger.
Is this too quick, though? I mean, that means...
Yeah, who am I to judge that?
I mean, a year to have the kid, you're going to assume a year to court a relationship pre-kid.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily, but say, let's just go...
But even so, that's 2 years.
2 years, so then you've got three...
She could have been sitting there for 3 years pining away for him while he's in a coma going, I don't know what the fuck's going to happen.
And then just met a dude and popped one out?
Yeah.
All right. I don't know.
I don't think it's too soon.
Yeah, you're right. 5 years is 5 years is a long time.
David Bowie once said something about 5 years. We got 5 years.
That's true.
He's kind of very walk-in-y in that scene where they're talking. But like, I get his point. Like, she's like she's trying to be nice, see this person that she has a history with.
Yeah.
And they, like, he literally brings up, he's like, it's been 5 years for you. It's been like 2 days for me. It's like, I went to sleep, I woke up, and you're married with a kid.
Yeah. I think she does a good job in this scene of conveying, like, this is awkward.
Yep.
B, she clearly still has feelings for him.
Yep.
And, like, she's uncomfortable and doesn't understand how to present herself.
Right.
I think it's a very well done scene.
I do too.
Where it's authentic in the fact, it's not like she's a bitch going like, I'm over you. That's she's right. Like, oh my God, Johnny. Like, not only are you back, but you're like more beautiful than you were before. Like,
your hair is much better.
You got rid of that dumb haircut.
Yeah. And those glasses weren't doing you any favors.
And you've really come into your walk-in.
That's right. God, you're a real sport to me.
Yeah, sport's a good walk-in term.
Yeah. Okay. Johnny's mom dies. Johnny moves back home with his dad. Kind of a sad sack existence. But gets a call from a sheriff. Sheriff Bannerman.
That's one of the other credits.
From Castle Rock. Tom Skerritt.
Right. Yes. So to your question earlier of like, what are you thinking when you're seeing these credits? I'm like, wait a second. Christopher Walken, Tom Skerritt, Martin Sheen?
Uh-huh.
What is happening in this movie?
What the fuck is this movie? Yeah. Tom Skerritt showing up.
Tom Skerritt as a sheriff.
Uh-huh.
Perfect.
Full mustache.
Perfect role for Tom Skerritt.
I'm going to say this too. His hair on point in this movie. Yeah, we've got Captain Dallas from Alien. We've got the mayor of Seattle from Singles. Our own Tom Skerritt lives here in our hometown of Seattle. Here in the dead zone. And it's a perfect role for him.
Skerritt as a cop or sheriff, perfect.
I'm going to say this. I don't know if it's going to blow your mind, but think about this. Sheriff Bannerman from Castle Rock. Castle Rock is also where Cujo took place. It's where a number of Stephen King stories take place.
Really?
Yes. So Sheriff Bannerman that we're seeing here, Tom Skerritt, is the same character in Cujo that went out to the farm and was killed by the dog. That was Sheriff Bannerman.
Really?
Yes.
So this is supposed to take place before that?
This takes place before that. Exactly right. And in the book of Cujo, there's this whole thing, like the whole like fear that Taddeus III has around monsters in the closet, monsters under the bed. Part of that is the history of the Castle Rock killer, like kind of driving some of that fear. So Stephen King like did the work to like lace these things together.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. So Tom Skerritt comes to Colin, says, hey, they've had these series of murders in Castle Rock. The Castle Rock killer has been.
And there's this weird dog on the loose. Like,
yeah. Also a lot of bats around. I don't know if you can do anything about that. I know you're a teacher, right?
And also the cereals like making people sick.
That's right. People have been shitting blood. So do your psychic abilities have anything to do with that?
You don't have that cereal, do you?
Also, let me ask you a question. Can you fix a pinto? So ask for his help. He's at his wit's end. He doesn't have any leads, doesn't know what to do. Ask Johnny for his help. That's where Johnny says, Tom Skerritt says, God has blessed you with this gift, Johnny, you might as well use it.
Hmm.
That's where Johnny says, God, it's been a real sport to me. He threw a truck my way, put me in a coma for 5 years. This isn't a gift.
And then Tom Skerritt says, this is Campbell Scott's line, but if give them great coffee and great music, they will park and ride. And then Tom Skerritt goes, my answer is no.
No. Slow-mo.
Cut to Alice in Chains.
Sure. Yeah. State 11 Trust is playing over the background.
Different movie.
Yeah. Sheriff Bannerman leaves. Sarah once again comes calling to the house this time. Brings a baby. Weird move.
Yeah. Well, this...
weird move.
It's a weird... The fact that they're, like, hanging out this much is weird just to begin with. Where she's just like, all right, now we're back. We're like besties. I'm married, but we're going to hang out all the time.
Well, I mean, twice. Let's be fair. She saw him in the hospital. Now he's back at home. She goes to visit. Like, I got the idea that there had been a good chunk of time that had passed between him being in the clinic and him being at home. Comes calling with the baby. They have some moments.
Do they get it on?
They can really get it on.
Do they get it on?
I think so. Yeah.
Well, there's this whole blouse situation. Uh-huh. What is happening? She's like, and she makes a comment about like, well, now we can finally.
We can go back. Like she says something about how she should never have let him leave that night.
Yeah. And yes. And she said something about, well, you said some things were better left.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Better waited for. And now we can finally redeem that. Or, I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah. I think that's enough for us to assume that they fucked for sure.
She's married.
She is.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm also just going to call out, she came over there with the baby.
Sure. Yeah. Put the baby away.
Yeah. Put it in a cardboard box. We'll fuck on the floor. Baby will be fine for 5 minutes.
And she's having Christmas dinner with them?
I don't think it's Christmas dinner. Christmas is later.
But it's a holiday dinner.
It's some kind of dinner.
So she comes over, fucks him on the living room floor.
Cooks dinner.
And then cooks dinner for the family.
Uh-huh.
Her husband is none the wiser.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, and that's, you say that, cooks dinner for the family, because they sit down there like it's a family.
They have like a family dinner.
Uh-huh. And dad even says something about how it's nice to have a family around the table again.
Yes.
Which then makes things awkward. So she leaves. He says, well, I see you again. She says, not like this. Puts the kid just in the front seat. Bottle of beer in the hand, gets in. It was the early 80s, belt. Man. That's just how it was. Yeah. Drives away. So after she leaves, Johnny goes in. He's watching the news and sees a story about the Castle Rock killer. So something right. in this interaction has made him realize, okay, maybe there is something I can do to help. So he goes to Castle Rock. Tom Skerritt takes him through this tunnel, where they'd found some evidence, a cigarette pack. He gets nothing off of it, but he milks that scene for a bit. He wanders around, breathes real heavy, does his like wide eyed staring around, and then says nothing.
Yeah, he's like, nothing. Yeah, I didn't. That was all for
sorry,
show.
Nothing, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to need to touch their hand.
I want you to feel like I was trying to do something. Great timing, because as they're in that tunnel, they get a call that they found another body. So rush over there, body's in a gazebo. He goes up, touches the body, gets one of his jerky flashes, and he sees the entire scene. And again, puts him in the scene.
He's there.
Yeah,
he's in the gazebo. That's as right. It's happening.
As it's happening. I did nothing. I was there. I did nothing.
Yeah, you brought that on yourself.
I really did. Yeah, you didn't even push me into that one. It was just there. He witnesses the murder and sees that the murderer is the sheriff's deputy, Frank Dodd.
Dodd?
Dodd. I saw his face.
Killer.
Dodd. Dodd, who'd been there with the crowd... has slipped away, took the sheriff's car, went running. So Tom Skerritt, Johnny, they head off to Dodd's house to go track him down. Why the sheriff? Why? I'm not trying to do this. It's just slipping out. Why the sheriff brings Johnny to quite possibly a bloody, what will be a bloody violent crime scene?
Well, if he's going to apprehend or question the killer.
Yeah.
You're probably not going to bring a civilian there.
Particularly when your only evidence at this point is this dude who said, yeah, it's this guy.
Right. That's true.
That's our only evidence.
That's true. It's a guy who said it was the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, his running away.
Weird that he runs away.
Yes, though. For sure.
Back to his parents' house. Like, no one's going to find me here.
Well, I think that's where he lives. I don't think that's his parents' house. Well, I mean, it's his parents' house, but I think that's where he lives.
But why go back? You don't think they're going to go back? Like, they're not going to find you at your house?
Well, I think that's...
Parents or not.
Yeah, the scene ends this way. I think he realizes there's no way out.
Sure. You think?
I do.
You think that's...
I'm basing that solely off of how this scene ends.
All right, why don't we get there?
So, they get to the Dodd house. Mom doesn't want to let them in. Sheriff goes in. Or she says he's not here. Walken says, he is upstairs. I saw him in the window.
It's good. You're getting better.
It's the practice here. They go in. Meanwhile, upstairs, like, his bedroom, Dodd, the killer, was reminiscent of the Norman Bates room in Psycho, in that it's essentially a kid's room. It's like got kids wallpaper. There's like comic books.
Yeah.
It's like a little kid's room that this guy's living in. It was a nice little kind of creepy detail that if you're not really paying attention, it won't jump out at you necessarily. But like you see that and you're like, ooh, I don't like that. By the way, dude was naked. Then gets in this, what is like a fisherman's like slicker or something?
But it's black.
Yeah, black. It's
strange.
High neck collar.
It's like a weird waterproof outfit.
Creepy. Pulls out a pair of scissors, which we saw in the vision that Johnny had.
This might be the weirdest way to kill yourself.
You would think there'd be better ways, yeah? Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, take those scissors and like cut a vein.
Right. Instead of like going down on the scissors.
That's right. Yeah. So yeah, as it turns out, dude blows those scissors.
It's this weird scene where I don't even understand how he gets them to stand up, but he Jimmy rigs some scissors to stand upright on the edge of the tub.
Yep. It looked like there was like something kind of heavy there that he like kind of jammed one of the
no one's ever done scissors. This. And then he goes down with his mouth to kind of measure like, all right, this is where I'm going to jam my face into the scissors. Uh-huh. Which is no one's ever done this.
No, you're
this
right.
This is not a death scene you've ever seen.
It's a weird way to go.
It's not even a weird, it's so weird.
But it's not even weird. It's so weird.
It's beyond weird.
It's, I will say, like watching him open his mouth wide and start to go down towards those scissors, I'm just like, no.
You.
So while all this is happening, Johnny grabs Mom's hand and then has another flash. Like, you knew. Mom knew the whole time.
Mom is like, is kind of weird though. What does she say? I'm trying to figure out where this is in my notes. You knew. Oh, that's it. Yeah. So Walken is like, you knew. And the mom goes, mom says something like he's the devil.
Yeah.
You're the devil.
Another like religious overtone.
But why is he the devil? He just can see what the future truth is. Like he can see the truth.
Right.
He's not the devil.
It's still coming up. The truth.
The truth.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, this is a very kind of, it's a theme that Stephen King runs with a lot in his stories and his books, of like these really kind of Pentecostal kind of Quaker, like super religious people in these kind of small main towns. And like, you see, again, I was talking about like how kind of the screenwriter and Cronenberg are kind of painting with wide brushes here, we get that idea with his mom, with Johnny's mom, that she's very kind of religious. We don't get a ton of information about it, but just like in the characterization of what she says, it's like, that's enough to go, oh, like she's like this kind of highly religious person. At least I was getting that.
Huh.
And we get the same thing. It's like almost like kind of a mirror here of highly religious, possibly over, you know, kind of commandeering mother. And what the different paths that could have happened here. So like Johnny's path in his life was, you know, become a teacher, get hit by a truck, go into a coma. Frank Dodd's path was to become a cop and kill young women. Like their mothers are very similar. I don't know. Like there was something about that, that I was like, oh, what are we playing with here? I'm not sure exactly what the point is.
Interesting.
But it's interesting. So Thomas Garrett busts into the bathroom, sees that, Dodd has killed himself, scissors in his mouth, twitching in the bathtub. Disturbing. And then mom comes charging up with his gun. Shoots Johnny. Not the first time that Johnny's going to be shot in this movie. Shoots him. Sheriff shoots her. They have like this kind of death stare down on the stairs. Kind of fades to black.
It's this like overly dramatic,
yeah,
slow motion death scene.
Yeah. I don't know that we needed it.
It feels like it's supposed to be bigger than it, because that's it. We don't go back to this.
That's right. That's it.
That's it for this plot line.
It's this weird little sidestep, and that's like one of the things that like I'm trying to like come to terms with in this movie is like this movie's like weirdly episodic.
Yeah.
It's like he does this thing, this happens. He does this thing, this happens. He does this thing, yep, this happens, and they don't necessarily tie together.
None of them tie together. There is no through line to this,
except other for Stilson, that they just kind of sprinkle in a little bit until, yeah, he comes in as a character.
Sure.
In the book, it's more so. In the book, we get, okay, we from the very beginning, we get the history of Greg Stilson, and we see his rise through the book as Johnny's going through these things. But that's not how the movie plays out.
Yeah.
It's a weird structure for a movie.
Yeah, because the girl kill the his visions originally, and then his helping Tom Skerritt,
uh-huh,
like none of that kind of stuff comes back. It's just building on his ability, I guess, to see the future. It's like,
no,
it's episodic, I guess. It's you're right. It's like this, you know, it's like the Chronicles of
Narnia.
Johnny Five.
The Chronicles of Narnia. It's, yes, you're exactly right. But also, I think there's an important point here that none of his visions thus far have been of the future. It's all been either present day or past.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is why I think we then keep this next episode, because that's what then gives him a vision of the future. So after this whole thing in Castle Rock, he moves, he leaves his dad's place, goes and finds this apartment. He's tutoring kids.
Lives in an apartment that apparently has a clock tower. Like, this house is amazing. Did you see this
good
exterior shot of the house? It's like four stories. There's like a tower in the middle of it.
But they're also building a billboard like right across the street.
Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how you got a good deal on it.
Probably how. Exactly right. A Greg Stilson billboard that they're building across the street. He's tutoring kids. They show him in a scene, with this young girl that he's tutoring. That girl, just putting a pin in this for future episodes, is a young girl in another David Cronenberg movie called The Brood.
Okay.
So that will come back to haunt us later, pin, I guess. So Rich Dad shows up at Johnny's place. The guy that was in License to Kill. Shows up, says his son, Chris. Right?
Well, hang on. Before we move on, Doc pays a visit straight away.
That's right. Yep.
And Johnny says, Doc, I'm not getting better.
Uh-huh.
I'm getting worse.
Yeah. the doctor makes the point that his visions are actually sucking the life out of him. It's making him sick.
But Doc finds other cases where there's people have visions, and I don't remember the point of that, but he does find other cases. He discovered other cases, and as the phenomenon grows, they become weaker.
Right. He wants to pull him back to the clinic.
And Walken says, no.
No. Yeah, and that's questionable. Like, I wonder, like, what... Do you think his thought is, like, trying to save Johnny? Or is he maybe trying to make a name for himself?
I mean, it's probably... I get the sense that the doc is kind of genuine. He
seems like a good dude.
He seems like a good guy. He's probably trying to help.
Trying to help you out.
He's a good dude. He's trying to help you out. But he's probably also seizing the moment of wanting control. Like, he wants sole custody of this case.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't
possibly
know. I get the sense, I mean, as they go on, because they're like, you know, they're sitting at his kitchen table drinking whiskey later.
Yeah.
Like, I get the sense that Doc's a good dude.
I do too. And I think I'm a bit... I think I'm bringing some Cronenberg baggage to this, because a couple of movies prior to this, we have doctors in the medical profession that have kind of nefarious thoughts. I don't know that that's the case with Sam.
Okay.
It was more a question to see if that was coming through to you at all.
Not completely. Okay. A little suspicious, but not totally.
Okay.
So then we get the rich dude.
Rich dad.
Comes over.
Yep. Shows up.
Not sure who he is. Are we supposed to know who this guy is?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. It's just he's got a troubled son, antisocial, won't learn, in a shell, shy. He wants Johnny. Says he can work miracles with kids. He's willing to pay top dollar. Just come out and meet him. Just come out and meet him. Nothing, you know, we're not signing anything here. Just come out and meet him.
Sure. No sex stuff. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. Just, it's like, I'm not going to put a finger in your butt. Nothing like that. Just come out. So Johnny goes out to visit. I love this line. Like, he goes up to Chris's room.
Yes.
Like, Chris is like sitting at his desk, not really saying anything. And Johnny's like kind of trying to make contact with him. He's like, you know, your dad says, God damn it. It was trying to come out that Chris Walken. You know, your dad says you're kind of, you know, in a shell. And the kid goes, not a shell. My dad's the one who lives in a shell. And I was like, okay, Chris, I like it. I'm on your side. So Johnny starts tutoring Chris.
Martin Sheen at the house.
Martin Sheen at the house. Let's talk about that.
On the way out.
Yes.
Martin Sheen is on fire.
Yes.
In this scene.
You might say he's over 10 on this one. He might be pushing it.
He might be doing this the entire movie.
He might be. And by might be, I mean he is.
He is on something in this scene.
Yeah.
Like, he's campaigning to his heart's get out.
That's right. He, as Johnny's coming in and he's leaving, go for a handshake, and he puts a button in his hand, which
prevents the contact.
Prevents the contact.
Yeah.
But also very kind of slimy politician thing.
Yeah.
I think that worked really well.
This whole scene, I'm thinking about Charlie Sheen, uh-huh, and I'm thinking about Emilio Estevez. He's like their age. Like, when I knew them, like, that, he's like their age. Probably a little bit older.
But this age, this era of Martin Sheen, in this movie in particular, you look at him and you see both.
Yes.
Emilio Estevez and Charlie Sheen in his face.
Yes.
Like, it's so weird to like look at him at this age and go, man, I can so clearly see both your son's faces in your face.
Yeah.
It was weird.
But that's what I was thinking about this entire movie with him. I'm like, just watching him, like, you gave, like, those guys came out of you. Like,
yeah.
It's crazy. And just to think about how nuts Charlie Sheen went.
Yeah. I mean, Martin Sheen was probably closer to their age when he was doing Apocalypse Now, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Um,
I mean, now, though, they're probably older than than him.
Than him in this movie, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You don't see them anymore.
Right.
So.
Johnny, rich dad, sit down. They're watching him, the Martin Sheen character, have a rally. And dad kind of spills it out of like, he's like, if you don't vote, then register to vote and vote against that guy. And we have a scene of Stilson at a newspaper, like threatening the editor of the newspaper. Like he'd gotten an early copy of the paper. I'm not going to lie. This felt very, all this like Stilson stuff felt very Trumpy to me. Like watching it in this day and age, I was like, wow, man, that's kind of, this isn't true history. This is a fictional story, but I'm like, man, there's a lot going on here that ties in with real life many years later.
That's you're not wrong. The thing that jumped out to me in this scene was he blackmails the reporter by showing him photographs of him with a woman who they set up to go out with him.
Yep.
That's not his wife.
Yeah. But it's one of Stilson's followers.
But then, so he goes, well, so then the guy, but that's the blackmail is we'll expose these photographs to your wife if you don't go along with us.
Right.
Then the reporter goes, well, what if I don't go along with you? Which is a weird question because like, well, they're going to expose the photos. Like that was
they just said that.
That's the whole point of the blackmail. And then Stilton disregards the whole blackmail and goes, well, I'll have my guy kill you. Well, so then what was the point of the photos? If you're threatening to kill him,
right?
What was the whole point of the photos?
The point of the photos was hoping that that would be enough to make him go, okay, I won't run the editorial.
But then, so when he goes, so then why, what if I don't go along with you? Stilton should have gone like, well, we'll release the photos, you idiot.
But I think what he's saying is, yes, I understand that, but that's not enough to make me stop. So what are you going to do then?
All right. So it's an escalates to they'll kill him.
Yes, exactly.
It didn't. That was not clear to me in the movie. I was like, they're going to release the photos, you idiot.
They just said that. Also, they seem to be making a point that Stilson's his right hand guy seems very kind of mafioso in his ways.
Connected.
Yeah.
Stilton's very overt about his motives too, though. Like you would think you would hide some of that stuff.
Like what?
Like don't do it directly.
Don't be there in the office.
Yeah, intimidate through
your dude go right. do it. Yeah,
you got to have a layer between you.
Yes, and I think you're exactly right.
The orders, right?
Had we spent more time with Sonny, his dude, and with Stilson more throughout the movie, I think we probably could have pulled that scene off if we would have known who they were and what their relationship was. Mm. I think since we'd spent so little time with him up until this point, we needed him there to understand it was him.
Yeah. Where's the Stilson spinoff show? That's what I need.
Okay. Do you want to talk through it? You just want to like spitball here a little bit or?
I need him running for governor. I need that.
I mean, he's not going to make it.
Or senator or whatever it
was. We saw what ends up happening with him.
Sure. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. Johnny tutoring Chris at his place, at Johnny's place this time, which seems weird. He should just go to the big rich house, but whatever. While they're tutoring, Sarah shows up. Hey, she's like pamphleting for Stilson, her and her husband.
Yes.
Show up at his place. Uncomfortable scene. Kind of breaks Johnny a little bit, starts crying.
Johnny does a wall cry.
He does. Turns away to the door, cries at the door.
Wall cries for a good while before he grabs the kid.
It's as if he's staring up at a haunted house up on a hill. Doesn't even realize he's crying. He's just stare crying. You know, he sits there for an uncomfortable amount of time. You're right. That's walking, milking it a little bit, I think. To which, like, the kid, like, I felt like the actor himself is like uncomfortable to a point of like, Johnny, why are you crying?
So he breaks. He's like, Chris, like, are you crying?
Mr. Walker? No.
No, I'm not crying. I'm not
crying.
You're crying.
Goes and grabs Chris, the character, not Chris Walken. Chris Walken grabs the character Chris, like a little kind of like embrace of, hey, thank you for seeing this as a human moment. But then gets a flash of these kids in hockey gear plunging through the ice to their deaths in the water. Freaks out, goes, talks to dad. Sure enough, that very moment, dad's pulling all his hockey gear out of this truck because they're gonna have hockey practice. He set up this hockey team for his son Chris and his friends. And Johnny's trying to talk him out of it, saying it's gonna go bad, it's gonna go wrong, people are gonna die. Dad doesn't want to hear it. They go inside. It escalates. Johnny swings his cane, breaks a vase. I don't know. He gets a little aggro.
Looking great with a popped collar.
Yeah, though, that peacoat.
That hair and the collar. Yeah. I mean, he looks like a villain.
He does.
Even though he's a protagonist.
Yes.
And this is going to come into play later.
Top.
He looks like a villain.
Yeah. He kept, like, in these scenes particularly, he was reminding me of his... The character he plays...
View to a Kill?
No, but Batman Returns. He plays Max Schreck in Batman Returns, a bad guy there. So whatever, they have this heated conversation. Dad relents, says, fine, I'll call it off, whatever. It doesn't matter. Call it off. So Johnny grabs Chris's hand again, doesn't get any kind of flash, and he feels
like, cool.
Awesome.
Problem resolved.
I did the thing. Turns out dad was lying. Hockey practice still on, all excited about it. Chris is like, yeah, no way. Later, dicks. Not gonna do it. And then we see Johnny walking down the street, crosses a newspaper thing, grabs a paper, looks at the headline, sees that there was a terrible accident, hockey practice, two people died. Calls up Rich Dude's house. Rich Dude is catatonic in a chair. Chris answers the phone. So he knows, okay, well.
Chris is all right.
Chris is fine.
Why not say anything? Because he doesn't say, he won't say anything. He just listens.
Yeah.
Just say, hey, I'm glad you're alive.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's like a callback to when Sam called his mom.
Oh, that's true.
Except this is now a situation where it did change something. Like, not him talking on the phone, but the fact that this is his first vision of the future. And the fact that he was then able to change the vision that he had. So, has a further conversation with Sam about this. And they bring up, like, the film's version of what the Dead Zone is. And honestly, I've already forgotten it, and I just watched this movie.
It's something he's talking about. He had a vision, but there was part of the vision
he couldn't see.
That he couldn't. There was something missing.
It was a dead zone.
It was a dead zone.
A dead zone.
And it doesn't. His description in the movie at the time made no sense, and it also didn't mean anything for the rest of the movie.
Right.
It has no bearing on the plot.
Nope.
It's a throwaway line.
Yeah, except doesn't Sam then say something about, oh, well, that's, it still doesn't make sense, this explanation, but he says something about that's like the space where you're able to change the future because it's not set in motion yet.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean.
Anything. It sure doesn't.
It doesn't. It's like, all right, I feel like you felt like you had to say the title in the movie.
Yeah.
To explain it, and you're not doing a very good job, and we're just going to move past this anyway.
I almost wish they would have left it out completely.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I thought they did, because my memory of going into...
Like you had a dead zone
during the part of the movie where they talked about the dead zone? Yeah, but I thought I could change the future.
You thought you could change it and make them talk about it, and it was worse.
More, yeah. Yeah, it's my memory of this is they didn't bring up the title The Dead Zone at all. And I was like, well, that's a thing, because you'd get through this movie and not know what the fuck Dead Zone means. And then I was watching the scene last night. I'm like, oh no, shit, they do bring it
they
up.
They do talk about it. They talk about it. Is it on the phone or is it the scene where they're drinking the whiskey at the table?
I think it's the scene where they're drinking the whiskey at the table.
Because that's also the scene where he asks him,
"Where do you go back and kill Hitler?"
If you knew,
oh no, that doesn't
if you
happen
knew
yet.
What Hitler did.
You're exactly right. Sorry, oh, no, that's two separate scenes.
Different scenes. Yeah. Okay.
Because they're having a rally right across the street from his place for Stilson, and he sees Sarah.
Oh right.
And he follows Sarah, essentially kind of stalks her over to this rally, trying to find her. Meantime, he gets kind of caught in this crowd where Stilson's coming through shaking everybody's hand, and he shakes his hand.
I like...
And he gets the flash.
He gets the flash. I like that on the way to Walken, Sheen kisses a baby, and you hear him... I don't know if this is... It's got to be like an ad-lib. It probably wasn't scripted. He's like, He goes, I'm supposed to do that. Like, but he's in the character. Like amped up character and he's like so excited that he just kissed a baby and he's shaking hands.
Yeah.
And it's just that classic thing where you're like, you're like shaking hands and kissing babies.
Yeah. But interesting. It's perfect. Interesting that comes up though.
That's true. Given what he does later.
Yeah. Being on camera, kissing a baby. Cause that's what he's supposed to do. So Johnny gets a flash, and what he sees is future state Greg Stilson, now president,
as a Bond villain. Apparently.
Essentially,
what is this? Yeah. What is? I don't understand this scene. What is this? What codes is he putting in? What is he doing?
He's
launching missiles.
He's starting a nuclear war.
Okay.
The second guy, because apparently Listen, I've never tried to fire nuclear weapons. I don't know if this is how it works, but based off of what I'm seeing in this movie, you need the palm prints of two people in charge. And he's threatening this guy to put his hand on it. If he doesn't do it, he'll cut off his fucking hand and put it on there. So he's had this vision. He's had this holy vision. And this is a plan that's been in motion for years. So what Johnny's seeing is in future state, Stilson goes through, becomes president, starts World War III. So then that leads to the conversation with him and Sam later of like, if you could go back, knowing what you know now, go back in time and kill Hitler, would you do it? Great classic question. Every stoner in college has asked their friends this question. Maybe not everyone, but a number of them. I like Sam's response in that it's like a misdirect.
It's a little bit of a misdirection. Yes. You think he's going to say no.
Yes.
And he's like, I would kill that motherfucker.
That's right. He's like, as a doctor, medical scientist, somebody who loves people, then my answer obviously has to be, yes, I would go kill that son of a bitch. It was a great line. It's a great delivery of that line. I loved it. So then Johnny becomes Travis Bickle from Taxi Driver at this point. It's like the movie then takes like a sixth act at this point.
Yeah.
So he's going to go take out Greg Stilson. That's his game.
There's a scene where he's prepping to go. He grabs the rifle. And there's a quick shot and it fades away where he's unscrewing something on the bottom of the rifle. It makes no sense to me. I don't have a rifle. I don't know how rifles work per se, but nothing about shooting this or loading this gun tells me you're supposed to unscrew the thing that holds the like trigger on. Like there's a plate on the bottom he's unscrewing and I don't understand what that is.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't notice that. I didn't pick it up at
okay.
all.
It fades away as he puts the screwdriver into it.
What I did notice is his packaging for this gun is like essentially like wraps a blanket around it.
Yes.
Like he's obviously carrying a gun on a bus and then walking down a city street with what is obviously a gun. And nobody has a problem with this at all.
Are you sure it wasn't like a broomstick?
I'm pretty sure it was a gun.
A broomstick wrapped in a blanket.
While this is all going on, like we hear voiceover of a letter that he's written to Sarah.
Do you think is she reading it, listening in the voice of Walken?
That's right. Sarah.
If you're reading this.
It's too late.
And I'm already dead.
Hey, just want you to know No, I think we're hearing the voice, his inner voice, as he's writing the letter. My question is this a dick move, this letter?
Is his inner voice Christopher Walken?
His inner voice sounds exactly like Chris Walken. Doesn't everybody's? Doesn't everybody's?
Is it a dick? What is... I think I missed this whole part.
He essentially says, you know, what is he saying in the letter? I always loved you. You're the love of my life.
Do you think it's a little like...
Things are going to happen.
It's going to put too much on her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that I care for it. I don't know that it ever occurred to me watching it before, but like I'm listening to this time going, why? Dude, like all you're doing is like bearing yourself to her.
It's maybe selfish.
Yeah, it's very selfish. Like throwing this all on her, and by the time she sees this, you're fucking dead. I think it's kind of a dick move. I'm gonna say that.
You're probably right. I don't remember this scene, so I'm
didn't jump out to it.
No.
Okay.
I think I was so taken aback by like what? Why did he unscrew a plate on the bottom of the gun?
Also, he's obviously carrying a gun.
It's not where the bullets go. You see him unsuccessfully load bullets for like 10 minutes later. So.
Do they hold some, is it like a compartment where they hold some sort of like gun oil or something?
I don't know. I need to look this up. I don't understand what that was.
Okay. He hides out in like this town hall building where Stilson's going to have a rally the next day. Hides out, upper balcony. Stilson folks show up, as does Sarah and her husband and her child. Brings her child to a political rally. Child, that's a bad thing. It's just very convenient.
Child's very politically active.
That's right. Super into Stilson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super Republican.
That's right. Pretty religious. Pretty religious. Stilson goes up to give his speech. Johnny jumps up with a rifle. And immediately Stilson grabs Sarah's baby.
Does he shoot? I think, doesn't he shoot?
He does take a shot, you're right.
He takes a shot and misses.
Yep.
So he's a really bad shot.
He's a teacher.
Because they're like 15 feet away from each other.
He's up on a balcony. He's probably never filed a rifle before in his life. That's maybe why he was unscrewing it. He has no idea what these things do. It's like, what is this? I think I take a screwdriver.
He thought that's where the bullets go.
That's right. You're right. Takes a shot, misses. Stilson grabs the baby, uses it as a shield. So while Johnny's there maneuvering with the rifle until they get the baby out of the way, goes to aim and take a shot. Sonny, his right-hand man,
Cher,
shoots him.
Cher.
Sonny and Cher, both of them, saying, I got you, babe. And then they shoot him. It was ironic use of music in this movie. I like this shot, this bullet shot.
The bullet?
Like you see it go through him and take out the light behind him.
Yeah.
It's a nice little touch.
A little sad with that.
Well, sure. This is the guy you've been with the entire
movie.
This
is the main character, the protagonist.
Yeah.
He gets shot.
Gets shot.
Falls off the balcony.
That fall, also a great stunt. It looks great. Like this shot, this fall, I was like, all right, yeah, you got me, Cronenberg. Nicely done. Falls, hits the ground. He's obviously on his way out. People are freaking out. There's pandemonium. Stilson comes over to him. I guess, assuming to try to find out why.
What's he's like, who are you?
That's right.
Who are you?
That's right. He's singing that Who song. Who are you? Who are you?
And Walken's like, I'm Christopher Walken.
Hi.
Walken.
Who are you? Grabs his hand and has a final vision of the future of Greg Stilson. Which is he's sitting, I'm assuming, in a hotel room somewhere. There's a copy of a Newsweek on the bedstand, nightstand, that shows him on the cover holding a baby as a human shield as he's being shot at.
It says Stilton's finished.
Stilson's over, something like that, yeah. And then he puts a gun to his head, kills himself. So Johnny realizing, hey, cool, I did it. Changed the future. Sarah comes rushing over, which if this were playing out in real life, I don't know that would happen. Now that I'm sitting here thinking about it.
She sticks around. Yeah, she sticks around. After a gunfight,
yeah,
she's just hanging out.
Yeah. I mean, her baby was just...
She would have ran for safety.
Also, I would assume, think that her ex, who tried to take a shot out of the political guy that I'm totally behind and campaigning for, is probably a fucking nut job. And I should probably get the fuck out of here. Doesn't. Goes to him. They hold each other. She says...
She says she loves him.
That's right. He says goodbye.
Her husband is right there. And she's like, I love you. The guy who just tried to murder the political guy that's campaigning. Yeah. She goes, I love you.
Yeah.
So it's clearly wasn't over with her.
Apparently not. She's still harboring some feelings there.
But not some, like all the feelings.
Every feeling. Particularly love.
Yeah.
You're right. I don't think it was over with them, but you know what was over? The movie. That's where it stops.
And Walken's life.
Cut to credit. Yeah. Well, no, he's still alive. Come on.
You don't think he dies here?
Johnny or Christopher Walken?
Johnny.
Yeah, I think Christopher Walken's been replaced. Since 83, it's been a different Christopher Walken. That's it. Dead zone. Nikki, where you at? Talk to me.
Oh boy.
Getting the feeling maybe this wasn't one of your favorites.
Oh boy. Let me just ask you this question. What in all the fucks did we just watch?
Okay. Well, The Dead Zone. I thought we covered that.
Okay. I don't think this was a horror movie, first of all.
Yeah. I don't necessarily disagree with you.
This seems like a movie about a guy who has special powers that can be used for good.
Uh-huh.
But he's somehow, but it somehow played like he has this affliction. It's not a benefit. Mm-hmm. It's not a, I have this thing I can use for good. It's
right.
I have this disease and I'm, every time he,
it's like a curse for him.
Yeah. It's like a curse. Yep. Every time he does something that's positive, the music and the editing make it look like he's evil.
Right.
It makes it look like a curse.
Right.
Like the movie when he grabs the mom's hand and he's like, you knew. And right. She's like, you're the devil. They play it like he's the devil. Yeah. And like it happens repeatedly throughout the movie where he notices something and it's not, it's like the
people
music
are automatically against him.
The cues in the movie are like, you should be scared. But wait a second. No, he actually just solved a murder. That's a good thing.
Right.
Like, why are we scared that he can solve a murder? It's a very bizarre way to shoot this movie, and I don't understand what Cronenberg was going for.
Some very interesting points. Yeah, I don't disagree.
Let's see. I think maybe one of my biggest criticisms, I mean, from a filmmaking standpoint, if I can give Cronenberg notes, would have been that.
Go ahead.
Secondly, instead of trying to kill Martin Sheen, maybe just figure out how to alter the election and not get killed. Like, you don't have to kill him. You clearly didn't have to because you didn't and still won. So could you have done something to alter the election and still be alive?
What are you recommending?
I mean, I feel like I probably shouldn't say things on the air.
I'm not saying that you're going to go for this, but I mean, I'm just sure. Like, what do you think his plan should have been?
I'm sure there are things he could have done to try to alter the election.
Like rig an election?
Yeah. Versus trying to kill him?
Okay.
You think killing is the best option?
I'm not saying it's the best option. Murder is like the number one. Like, suddenly you've become convinced that whoever's running for office is going to start World War III, and you feel like you need to stop it.
Maybe a more so.
How do you rig an election?
I don't. It's a great question.
Thank you.
I don't know how to rig an election, but maybe there's a more subtle. Maybe I don't know if murder is my first option. I think I start more subtly and then work up to murder.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Like maybe just some like really angry letters.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe try to get votes on for the other side.
Okay. Like, so like go through the democratic process.
Yeah. Try something that's because you can if you can always murder him at some point, like you can always shoot from the balcony.
So try something else first.
Try something that doesn't put you in mortal danger.
Yeah.
First.
Yeah. Well, twofold. I will come back at you with this. So he's, I think Johnny in the movie has tried to make this point to us that he's on his way out. These visions are draining his life.
Okay.
He doesn't have much more life to give. So this is a good way to use maybe his last days on Earth. He's also, to his soul, convinced, and that's why he's making this comparison with Sam, of like, if somebody could have gone back and stopped Hitler before they were Hitler.
Right, right.
That's what I'm seeing here, like, play out right now.
No, I get what's playing out. I'm just saying, I don't know if murder is your first course of action.
I don't know what other options you've got that case.
I just sold
to you. I disagree with the options you're providing.
All right. Other than that, I think Christopher Walken looks great.
Sure.
Martin Sheen's acting up a fucking storm.
He's giving it his all, for sure.
Like, this is a highlight reel for Martin Sheen,
yeah,
if I've ever seen one.
Yeah.
And interesting that he says in the movie that he has a premonition that he's going to be president. And he plays president
a
couple times.
He does become president.
Later.
Yeah.
And I wonder, it really makes me wonder, like, did Martin Sheen, does he just have something for being, for politics that
maybe
is like, he's like, I'm doing this. Like, I'll. Yeah, super.
He knows how to play a politician.
I think he does.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think, and then overall, we talked about this, but like, it seems like they just kind of didn't know what this movie was about, and so they had this idea of this guy who can see the past and the future, and they just sort of put him in different scenarios. And there's no real story. There's no plot. It's just it's like Quantum Leap or something. Like, it's just a guy who can do stuff, and they're like, here's a scenario, there's a scenario, there's a scenario.
Yep.
Like, what are you gonna do?
Yep.
And then it ends and you're like, oh, that, what was the point of
this
movie?
Well, that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get that. You know, and I hate to keep being the one saying, you know, yeah, but in the book, because this isn't the book, this is the movie.
No, we watched the movie, not the book.
Yep. You've got a through line of your villain from the beginning of the book to the end, and you don't have that with this movie.
Other than Cronenberg
sprinkles a little in there.
But it seems like he makes Walken the villain. The way that they shoot his scenes that aren't bad, they make him look like he's the villain. It's really weird.
Huh. I wonder then, if the thought was to build it into the audience that, okay, we're going to portray him as the villain, but then, oh, switcheroo, fifth act, we're actually going to bring in the actual villain. Because they do know, I mean, they do the work of, as I brought up before, kind of sprinkling in Stilson characters. So, like, the name's alive. Yeah, it's in there.
Maybe. But then they didn't do a good job of setting you up that Walken
as Walken's
was
the villain.
Villain.
Yep.
It's just, it's so strange.
There's something off about it for sure.
What do you think?
I mean, the points you're bringing up, I can't argue with. It's a weirdly paced movie.
Really Walken, weirdly paced.
I know, odd, right? It's great to see Walken.
It's so good to see him.
I mean, I've watched this movie a number of times, and I'm not disappointed when I watch it. But like, really trying to like take a critical look at it, I'm like, yeah, this is a weirdly put together movie. And as I said at the very top, it's an oddball of a Cronenberg movie. It's a bit of an oddball of a Stephen King story.
And not a horror movie.
Because, yeah, it's not really, it doesn't fit into the horror genre, really.
Why did you pick this?
Because it's a Stephen King adaptation.
But we're a horror podcast.
I know we are. But if you go to look at a list of horror movies, Dead Zone's going to be on that list.
Really?
And why? Is it just because it's a Stephen King book?
I think so.
Yeah, I don't know. So yeah, it's weird. It still sits weird. It sits weird after you watch it. It sits weird if you come back to watch it again. Hmm. And I can't, I think because there's not like a kind of standard through line for this where you want one, you expect it. It plays with the same sort of tropes that other movies do, but it doesn't follow that kind of same storyline. There's just something kind of weird about it. And I was trying to think through, I'm like, okay, well, what would fix that? Is it Stilson throughout the movie? That probably would help. I'm like, do we take out some of these episodes? Do we need the whole Castle Rocks part? Like, that's the part that jumped out for me, like, reading the book. I remember that section of the book, like, really jumping out to me. And, like, honestly, probably also the part of the movie that really jumps out to me. That's where it gets probably closest to a horror movie, is that yeah. short section.
Yeah.
But I think they're purposely choosing the episodes to lead up to this. I just don't know that their execution was right. I don't know. I can't quite put my finger on...
I think it's the execution.
Like, what's not jiving with
it? And
exactly.
the writing. I think they had ideas. I don't think those ideas gelled. And I don't think they executed the half-gelled ideas very well. I don't understand how this movie was greenlit at all.
Well, because it was based off a best-selling book. It was greenlit.
I'll say I'm thankful that it was.
Okay.
Because I enjoyed the shit out of this movie.
Okay. Wow. Well, that was a turnaround I was unexpected.
Okay.
You're the twist ending that I wasn't ready for.
The fact that it's called The Dead Zone and it's got an amazing title, like the font is amazing. Yeah. The font is amazing.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic title.
Yeah.
The way that they bring it up in the movie is terrible.
Yeah. They kind of missed the landing on that one for sure.
Yeah. But you've got Christopher Walken.
Sure do.
You've got Sheen. You've got Tom Skerritt.
Sure do.
It's fantastic.
And there's no reason for Tom Skerritt to be in this movie.
Absolutely yeah. not.
But he's there. And God bless it.
I would watch this movie repeatedly.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with this movie.
Awesome. I was not expecting you to land there.
Look, it's not good. It's a terrible movie. But it's so fun.
I wouldn't say it's terrible.
I think it's terrible.
Okay. I wouldn't go so far as to say
it's a lot of fun.
Before we land on our ratings, you take a look at what critics had to say about it.
I did. Yeah, Dead Zone. So I was fully expecting this to get trashed.
Okay.
And I was shocked to read.
It wasn't?
That it was. Wikipedia, at least, says that Dead Zone was received fairly positively on its release. So it's got an approval rating of 88%.
Okay.
On Rotten Tomatoes, based on 49 reviews, 7.6 out of 10. Consensus reads, Dead Zone combines taut direction from David Cronenberg. I don't know about that. And a rich performance from Walken to create one of the strongest Stephen King adaptations. I feel like everything we've read so far about all of them, they all say they're the strongest.
Okay.
Yeah, the Roger Ebert sort of liked it, gave it 3.5 stars. Let's see. He said it was the best of the half dozen cinematic adaptations of Stephen King to date. Praised Cronenberg's direction. Like, I don't understand why everybody's like, this is a fantastic movie. I don't actually think that it was at all. I think it was a terrible movie.
But yet you loved it.
Yeah, I'm not saying I liked Walken. I liked this crazy. I was like, what is happening in this movie? There's no plot in this movie. It's just episodes.
I wonder if that's like a breath of fresh air. I wonder if, like, you go into, I mean, even today, this wasn't just a 1983 thing. You go into, like, okay, I'm going to watch this guy who's made these weird, oddball, body horror movies up until this point, and I'm going to watch his take on a Stephen King novel, his interpretation of that. And it's, you know, going into it what to kind of expect out of a Stephen King type story at this point. And you get this, which doesn't feel like anything you've seen before, like in that realm. It's like, it's very much more like a character drama than what you would typically expect of a Stephen King movie. Right. I mean, like, you think of, like, the closest thing I can think of to this and like what we've watched is you've got Carrie. You've got a character who has similar kind of psychic powers, right? Hers, she can push out and do things with. And how that then ends is this huge violent uprising where she destroys a bunch of people and kills a bunch of things. This is not what happens here. This is all very kind of feels a little more adult and a little more sophisticated in taking this idea of something that's paranormal in a way, but it's so focused on one person and how that affects him and his relationships with other people and his own health. And then, like, as far as they then take it is, like, he has a psychic flash of what the future will look like, so then takes it upon himself to end that. And that doesn't feel to me like your typical kind of horror movie fare or Stephen King kind of movie. It doesn't feel... I expect a good amount of, like, kind of cheap, schlocky stuff with a movie like that. And you're not getting that here. So I just wonder if, like, people went in with that expectation and came out and was like, wow, that's not what I was expecting at all. This is very different. It feels a little more mature and grown up. I think sitting on it now, looking through it, it's like, yeah, I don't know that it's put together all that well. There's some faults here. But this movie's different than anything we've watched, really.
I wonder if they had added, like, because this movie was about an hour 44, if I remember right.
Yep.
I bet if this was like 2:15, if they had added about 30 minutes to build a little more character, to thread Martin Sheen's character through a little bit more.
Yeah.
I wonder if it would have been better.
Maybe.
If they had added, tried to thread it a little bit more. I think that would have been better.
Fill in the spaces a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Possibly. Well, buddy, if you're going to rate it, I'm fascinated. I'm on the edge of my seat right now. I don't know where you're going with this.
I loved this movie. I don't know if I can give it a 5.
Yeah.
Because of its faults. Yeah. But I'll give it a 4.
Okay.
I'll watch this again. I mean, you can't look away. It's walking. You can't not watch this.
It's really him though, right? I mean, it's like, it's...
Yes. If this was anybody else, I think this movie, I'm trashing this completely.
Yeah.
But Walken...
You're captivated by that dude.
I am captivated by Christopher Walken.
Agreed.
Especially young Christopher Walken with that goofy hair. Uh-huh. It's such a treat to see him get done up in this like goofy way to be like, I'm this young school teacher kid.
Yeah.
It's great. What about you?
I'm going to go a touch lower. I also love this movie and will rewatch it and have rewatched it. And we'll probably pick it up again in about another year and watch it again. Is it one of my favorites? No, but I do enjoy it. I'm going to go 3.5 on it. 3.5. All right. That's it. Dead zone. We did it. We're here. We're going to do one more King adaptation.
Okay.
I'll probably come back to King movies later. But one more renowned, well-known horror director taking on a Stephen King adaptation.
What do we got?
I'm going to tell you right now. That's what I'm here doing. This next episode is going to drop about as close to Halloween as we're going to get. And I feel like if it's Halloween time, it's got to be a John Carpenter movie.
Ooh.
So we're going to watch John Carpenter's take on the Stephen King novel, Christine. Know anything about it?
No.
Did I say Christine? Nothing.
Nothing.
I love it. God damn it, I love it. There's just nothing there for you.
There's nothing. I don't know anything.
I love it. Okay. This one, also 1983.
83?
The last three movies we've watched, 1983.
All right.
Awesome. Okay, we're gonna come back 2 weeks. We're gonna talk about John Carpenter's Christine. In the meantime, horror curious all over the web spaces, all over all over. You can find us on Instagram. We're there, Horicurious.
Horicurious.
On Twitter. That one was good. None of them are good. Horicurious, we're there. Hit us up on our email, horicurious@gmail.com. What are your thoughts on the Dead Zone? Did it work for you? Is it weird for you? Do you look at this and go, I don't know what the fuck you guys are talking about. That movie is perfectly normal.
Do you want more walking?
Do you want us to do an entire episode as walking? I have to imagine nobody wants that. I don't want that.
I'm
tired of it. And I apologize for the last, whatever, 2 hours that we've been doing this.
I think your walking's good.
you can't escape it. It's not bad. Nah, that wasn't great.
It's not bad. It's not good. It's not bad, though. I think you're onto something. Well, I think you've got the New York piece of it more than I do.
I'll keep working on it. I'll practice it. Hey, hit us up in those places. Let us know what you want to watch. Rate, review, recommend. And while you're thinking about doing that, we're going to go watch Christine. We're going to come back and talk about it in 2 weeks. Anything else you want to hit before we get out of here? You want one last shot at the walking bat?
No.
All right, then. Let's call it.
Yeah.
Okay. As I said, we'll be back in 2 weeks talking about Christine, John Carpenter's version of that, 1983. In the meantime, this has been Horror Curious. I'm Bill Badgley.
I'm Nick Geyser. Don't try to walk an impersonation. Don't do it. I'll find your fucking button.
Wow. Where are you looking?
Wouldn't you like to know?